Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, John. I'm a minute late to my own show.
Oh, that's okay. Better to be pretty late than ugly early.
So are you on a bike, or a train?
I'll be on a bike very shortly. I actually got held up by some stuff at work, so I couldn't leave as I would normally plan. So that's okay. Life is like that.
Great. I'm glad you'll have... Will you have ample time to your next destination?
I'll be able to squeeze it in. It's you know, it's how I live now. It's 24/7. You know, just it's, as I say, one Titanic at a time, you know?
Now you're not just a dog watcher, you're emergency on call or something like that.
Yes,
so
I was watching
CNN today, and there's been multiple bombings of the group, of ISIS with the Arab Coalition. And I'm going to play audio in a minute, but supposedly they're rushing into northern Iraq and Syria now and trying to steal oil. But could you run the show for 30 seconds while I have a call of duty in the Golden Throne, and I'll be right back.
Absolutely. Not a problem.
1 minute?
So, yes. So while Jane goes to put her holy hammer down, we're living in such a crazy world. In America, we're more obsessed with what kind of tattoo Miley Cyrus has, or you know, what's the latest. I think J-Lo released a video with her booty dancing, and basically, you know, it used to be that some videos would be like bad porn, but it's getting to the point where some of the stuff is almost like good porn. It's just kind of crazy that people aren't doing music anymore. It's just overselling sex. But that's what happens, you know, if you want to get the ratings and the hits and the Twitter numbers up and the Facebook and YouTube hits. And that's what has become of the music industry in general. Even Taylor Swift got in on the act. She's doing kind of not so much a strip thing, but a dancing kind of video. And she's country. You know, country usually don't associate that with a dance video. But in the midst of all that, in the world, here's people getting their heads cut off, and you know, it's like another day at the office. So it's a crazy world we live in. You know, in America we're shaking our booties, and the other parts of the world are cutting their heads off.
Well,
say thou, Hammer.
I don't want to focus on ISIS. Here we go with the video.
Jake, at this hour, a senior U.S. official is confirming to CNN U.S. and coalition warplanes are back in the air over eastern Syria. This time, they are attacking in a very remote area of eastern Syria. At this hour, they are attacking ISIS oil installations. What we are told is there are a number of small, modular, if you will, oil refinery installations that ISIS uses to refine the oil it smuggles, the money it earns itself, about $2 million a day. U.S. and coalition warplanes now are attacking a number of sites, about a dozen targets, we're told, with precision weapons. I asked the question, why aren't we seeing the oil fires? And I am told we will see oil fires. The facilities are small. They do not believe there are civilians in the area because it is so remote, but this should become more visible in the coming hours. This from a senior administration official. The Pentagon press secretary, Rear Admiral John Kirby, who we all know so well, has just at this hour put out a very brief, very nondescript statement saying, quote, I can confirm that U.S. military and Arab partner forces are undertaking additional strikes today against ISIL terrorists in Syria. Those operations are ongoing, so we will not provide additional details at this time. The Pentagon is
John?
Going to provide additional details in the coming hours. But
The oil, the areas where the oil reserves are is just like a round storage unit. It's near Damascus, Syria. It's in the southern part of Syria, which borders Jordan. And like they said, it's in a remote part. So it doesn't look like it's too dangerous of an operation.
Not bad. I mean, I'd rather they blow up oil fields than people. Yeah, so that's kind of cool.
I just think we're only going to spend 15 minutes on this topic, and then I have another topic about one congressman I tried to reach who went AWOL on me for my article this week on the Reader. So we'll cover that topic next. So anyways, in this situation where we have the Arab coalition, countries like United Arab Emirates and Qatar and Saudi Arabia on our side, do you find it strange that we're partnering up with Arabs?
I don't, because we need the oil. You know, money is a common language that we all speak. So, you know, when it comes down to, people can have different agendas, but when it comes down to money, we all kind of speak the same language. And what's interesting is for Saudi Arabia, you know, they're kind of the cradle of all things Muslim. So they're caught in between because they're a little bit more, I would call, economically progressive. You know, they have a lot of American and international countries that go through there. So they're trying to be friendly and cool and like, hey, we're just like you guys. We can wear Levi's and, you know, drive nice cars. But then on the flip side, it's like they're kind of almost like the, you know, like, you know, we got to take care of Mecca and, you know, ignore those extreme terrorists in the corner there with the knives and the bombs attached to themselves. Don't look at them too carefully. So they have to position themselves where they don't piss off America, like, I would call it Western influences for money. And they also don't want to piss off, you know, the Muslim community, which wants to go radical. So they're really torn between more than we are.
I agree. I think they're more, they have an established relationship with the United States. The Bush family was friends with a lot of the top relatives in the administration for over 30 years.
Right.
And I agree. I think some Muslims don't like being pinned out as an extremist. And more moderate Muslims in certain countries are taking a stance. Iran doesn't have a hope in hell to be ever perceived as a non-extreme country, but actually there are a lot of educated people in Iran who don't like the current regime, and that reflects total Islamic rule.
Right, because you have, say, with Jews, So people will look at the Old Testament with all the wars and fightings, and they'll go, okay, that was the Old Testament. We don't really, you know, we try to avoid that kind of stuff. And, you know, you can look at America and go, well, we had slavery and we had civil wars and all this kind of stuff. And we kind of say, well, that's in our past, and we don't, you know, exploit Indians anymore. And we're, you know, trying to be peacefully tolerant and so forth. But then you have these other countries in the Middle East where they, you know, it's like in the past we used to cut people's heads off, and the next line would be, but we don't do that anymore. But oops, hold on a second, let's shut down my YouTube account here, and don't want to look at that one over there. So they're one of the few groups.
Well, I don't want to look either, to tell you the truth.
They're kind of one of those groups that they're caught between the past, which all countries have, you know, a dark past or a violent past. But they're living it out still at a brutal level, you know. And of course,
well, for a long time, Iran was dominated by European and U.S.-led leaders, like the Shah of Iran in 79, who fled the country after the Khomeini took over. And he hid out in the U.S. for a while because he needed surgery. But they wanted his head on a platter, the extremists, but they, you know, it wasn't really, I don't know, like the upscale Westerners probably didn't think he was such a bad guy.
Well, that does show a conflict too, because, you know, old school style of doing things as a country is you go in, you take over another country, or you, you know, exploit them, and you bring in your own government, you know, whether it's Rome, Greece, Babylon, you know, whatever. You take France, Britain, you know, the sun will never set on the British. You don't just go in there, knock off people, and then leave, and then they, you know, chaos ensues, and pretty soon the most violent person takes charge. So that's kind of the problem we have. If you're going to put in a Shah, I mean, put in really United States people and colonize it and, you know, conquest it. But we're conflicted. We don't really do that. So that's when we have so much chaos over there. I think.
Well,
I
was going to play a video. I think we've covered this a lot with Bob, too. You know, remember the fighting on the Turkish border with the Kurds and how the Kurds wanted to defend the other Kurdish refugees. So we covered quite a bit of this. So I'm going to play. Now we're going to shift gears. It's 5:40 p.m. and you have to leave for work soon. So there's a real nice-looking Minnesotan that's running for Congress. His name's Stuart Mills. And if you're near your computer, it's www.stuartmills.com. He's a 42-year-old married father of five who lives, wow, that's quite a bit of kids. He lives in the Brainerd Lakes area. He was a hockey player. He works in his family business. But the only thing that he's really projecting in the election is that he's a gun-toting American and he wants to maintain his belief system in preserving the Second Amendment. So I'm going to play this audio, but that's not what the show is about, necessarily about him. I want to explain what happened this week when I tried to contact his campaign after the audio.
Mm-hmm. I'm Stuart Mills. I guess I don't look like a typical politician, so people always ask me, why am I running for Congress? It starts with my family's hunting camp doctrine. If you complain about something, you get the job to fix it. So I'm fed up with Washington, the bickering, the debt, Obamacare. Instead of complaining, I'm going to fight to fix it. I'm Stuart Mills, and I approve this message because this hunting camp could teach Washington a thing or two.
By the way, John, did you hear the whole thing?
Yeah.
It was kind of blasting and loud in the beginning. I apologize. I didn't have time to turn it down. It starts out he's standing in front of a log cabin in the woods, which is what a lot of Brainerd looks like. And then it shifts where he's wearing an orange hunting outfit with some of his sons or friends. And the last position is he's standing with a rifle near his truck about to go hunting. But I'm going to play it one more time because there's a hidden message in there. I want you to see if you can get it. 1 second.
I'm Stuart Mills. I guess I don't look like a typical politician, so people always ask me, why am I running for Congress? It starts with my family's hunting camp doctrine. If you complain about something, you get the job to fix it. So I'm fed up with Washington, the bickering, the debt, Obamacare. Instead of complaining, I'm going to fight to fix it. I'm Stuart Mills, and I approve this message because this hunting camp could teach Washington a thing or two.
I guess, what did you gather from that subtle message? I want to see if you picked it up or not.
We can make more money for gun sales? No.
I think I have an advantage here because I'm seeing visuals, but to me, it seems like, okay, he doesn't like the organization in Washington, but he just kind of loosely threw in Obamacare like it was a random thought. And then at
right.
the end, he's holding a gun and walking with people who are about to. It's kind of, for me, it's like a John Wayne Law and Order thing. But also, the way to fix things isn't through the presence of force, it's through verbal dialogue in Congress, which everybody knows is slower than crap. And I don't know if this outsider, being an outsider in Washington, the desire to be an outsider coming in to fix things is going to work for this guy. In fact, he actually kind of has a lisp. If you, And I don't know. And all his only claim to fame is he was the director of personnel for Fleet Farm from 2000 to 2010, overseeing the management of a workforce of 6,000. Well, I don't know about that. He's the vice president of Fleet Farm. It's kind of like a Shopko or a Menards or a store like that. I don't know. There's a lot of kids dying, you know. I think last week in Arizona, 20 more kids died by some kind of mass gun violence. And I just don't think, if I was running for office, I wouldn't pick that as my top issue. Would you?
Because part of it is, you know, we kind of talked about how a lot of that gun violence is kids usually on antidepressants or medication, and then you combine guns and bad things happen. But in general, you know, talking and being political can solve a lot of things. But historically, like when you start dealing with nuts like ISIS, you have to pull up the guns, and it's hard to negotiate with people that are shooting at you. So he's kind of trying to keep it simple. And I can kind of see that has a certain appeal.
Well, there's nothing actually wrong with him as a person. He's actually fairly good looking, and he's also a board member of the Minnesota Fraternal Order of Police Foundation, which he created, the Fleet Farm Fraternal 4-H. I'm not quite sure what that's all about. It looks like some kind of fundraising thing. But I'm sure he's a good member of the community, but I had to write this article, and the deadline was Tuesday at noon. I contacted Stuart Mills, his opponent, Rick Nolan, who has, like, this New York chick named Sasha running his media. And I contacted the Mark Dayton, the governor's office, the guy who commented on the Adrian Peterson stuff. And then I contacted Al Franken, the one who runs for senator, which I'm pretty sure you know who is. He's a comedian who used to be on Saturday Night Live. So of all four of those campaigns, Stuart Mills' person called me back late Monday night and said, we'll send you an email, and then you can write us back with your questions. I never heard from them. I called them Tuesday morning to tell them the deadline's over. I needed to hear from them within 30 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Nobody wrote me back. And then the Rick Nolan campaign, Sasha from New York, wrote to say that she couldn't release a press publication within a couple of days, that they needed more time. And then I talked to the St. Paul office for Al Franken, who was able to issue me a generic statement on how Al Franken stood on the ISIS position on whether we should commit troops or not. So the farther you get up the food chain, the more hard it is to get in touch with these people, and the more delicate they are on how they want to project their image to the media. Like the Al Franken office asked me to maybe call Washington, D.C. if I had more specific questions. Nobody there was willing to just make a general comment. It's too risky, I guess, when you're that high up the food chain to do that kind of stuff.
That's true, and that's the nature of today. You know, it's political, it's all corporate, and it's just like any other business. It's about ratings and money. You know,
yeah, I don't really like that idea, John. I think in the old days, Al Franken would have just called me back and told me what he felt. And now that he's a big shot in Washington, it doesn't work like that. They have to issue a certain statement with certain words. It's all minced and tabulated to sound good.
Yeah, and they kind of have to, you know, because you're competing against other mega political people that have, you know, millions and millions of dollars, pumping millions of dollars of ads. So if you can't compete with that firepower, they're never going to hear you. It's like the reason they don't know about you is you don't have millions of dollars pumping you. So,
the thing is, why doesn't Stuart Mills call me back though? If I'm from the second largest publication in Duluth.
Probably he hasn't heard of you economically as far as the money flow. I mean, he's going to talk to people who are putting dollars in his pocket. So, and he knows.
Well, you know, I actually had to change my story because towards the end of my article, I mentioned who called back and who didn't, and I wrote that Stuart Mills was out hunting, so he could not be reached. But then, that was actually a joke and a lie, so I changed it. I said he was out in the field, and then in parentheses, because they said he was campaigning somewhere. So, yeah. And then in parentheses, I wrote hunting question mark. So it doesn't hurt my feelings if he doesn't call me back. I was just trying to give each campaign free publicity on something important they wanted to say about themselves.
Absolutely. Well, again, it's about money. You know, what can I say? It's about, if you, or no, let's put it this way. If you were from the NBC, you know, or the late night news or 60 Minutes, they would have called you back in, you know, 5 minutes. They probably would have took your call directly. So you just have to look at the economics. I mean, it's just plain.
Yeah,
simple,
well, I guess, you know? I guess because I haven't had my feet wet since 2008, that I haven't had my feet wet since 2008. I'm a little rusty politically, and I'm not sure everything I need to know and what to expect as far as dealing with these campaign people. So, well, I think we should end the show a little early since you have commitments and transportation issues. So maybe you could, your final thoughts could be, what's the most important campaign issue for you that they build a red line from Santa Monica to the dog job?
Yes. Save the humans. Which you're saving whales and dogs, but save the humans. Especially the 55-year-old dinosaur rock guitarist.
That's funny. So,
yes.
I mean, you know, I don't know. The reason I wrote the article, my final thought is that I'm embarrassed to say that I have a master's in political science, and I didn't even know who Al Franken's running mate was until 2 days ago. It turns out that he's an investment banker, and he's worth $57 million. And he's taking a leave of absence to run to the campaign.
Right. So that's what it's about. You know, people with money, and they get into politics, and they influence so they can change the rules for their other money people, or they're bored and they want to change the world, and you need money. So, you know, it's not a big mystery. You know, it's about money. Follow the green.
Right. Okay, well, I hope it's not all about money, John, because there are 377 volunteers in Duluth alone for the Democratic Farmer Labor Party. This is a population of 86,000 here, and they've already recruited up to almost 400 people for the election. I'm not necessarily feeling it this year, but part of the reason is because I'm out of the loop. I work 90 hours a week, and I'm a single parent. I haven't had time to dedicate to look into issues, but I still favor international issues over local issues, and I'm weak when it comes to local issues. So how do you feel about midterm elections before you hang up? Do you think it's boring, or do you even bother to vote in non-presidential years?
I definitely vote, and I usually, what I do is, if it's for spending money, I usually say no. If it's for cutting money, I usually say yes. Unless it's something important, you know, maybe kids.
Right. Did you hang up? Okay. Okay. Well, the show is ending now. What are your final thoughts?
My final thoughts are, follow the truth wherever it leads you, unless it's in the back of a police car going to a Minnesota political activist protest meeting.
Mine is, thank you, America, for allowing me to be oblivious. If I choose to ignore the election, I can. And if I choose to involve myself, I will. But I could technically live the rest of my life eating Doritos and watching Netflix. And I somehow will not go hungry. I still have health care. And I still luckily have a job. So thank you, America, for that. Ignorance is bliss.
Well, you've spent many years, you know, trying to help the political process. So you've done your part. And sometimes you just need to drink the Kool-Aid.
Well, I part of the article has to do with 2 4-year degree people who have issues they care about, but they don't know the names of the candidates either. And when they get to the polling station, they just hit the switch, Democratic Party line. So
right.
I think 90% of Americans are very, I wouldn't say they're uneducated, they just really don't care.
Right, or they get jaded. You know, you get into it and then you realize, well, no matter what I do, the product with the most money and the best media is probably going to win out. So, you know, I can understand it.
For John, it's all money. Money, 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 money.
Well, which is why you have your product, because then you know in advance this is the product I'm buying. You know, you don't worry about Jack in the Box or Taco Bell. You know what the Jumbo Jack's going to taste like. It may, you know, vary a little bit, but that's what the brand is for. So it's just like Levi Jeans. So when you vote Democrats or Republicans, you already know the product you're promoting. So it's good, but
I'm
it's also bad.
I'm starting to think there isn't a big difference between Demos and Republicans. So I'm going to make one more verbal tribute, and then I'm going to play a song. It's Money, Money by the OJs.
Okay.
So my tribute
is
to you, John, who on a daily basis you give to others despite what your economic condition is.
Oh. By the way, I'm on the bike, and I'm encountering some downhill and dangerous stuff where I need
I'll
to be on both.
I'll let you go.
I will say goodbye, America. Follow the truth.
Don't go downhill. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. So that was my co-host, John. He's been bohemian and traveling by bike. I'm going to end the show with this song. That's all, folks. I hope you enjoyed the show. Try to vote with your conscience. Pay attention to who you're voting for and if the issues really differ from that person's opponent. We appreciate your time with us. I appreciate that I have a strong listening audience. Thank you, and we'll talk again. Goodbye.